Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It is a great joy and delight to be with you here, and I am very grateful to Bishop Sauls for inviting me. I have been a friend of his since we were both ordained bishops about 9 years ago, and it is really wonderful to be here to see. I bring you greetings from Episcopalians across this church, from as far east as west as Taiwan and Micronesia to the churches of the Episcopal Convocation in Europe, in Austria and Belgium and France and Germany and Italy and Switzerland, and several places in South America and the Caribbean and all the rest of the United States. They pray for you. I ask you to pray for them. Yesterday morning at your convention, I got to meet with the Small Church Ministry Consortium, and they talked about the joys and challenges of life in rural and small communities. And one man told of the Sunday that he was serving as an acolyte, and he was scheduled to drive the visiting priest to a dinner after the service. He got a phone call during the service telling him his bowl was out. And not the first time. And he was torn between those conflicting duties. Is he going to take the bowl home, or is he going to take the priest to dinner? Another fellow from St. Hubert said that they also had to deal with escaping bowls and horses. And he told about the well-remembered occasion when the flock of chickens next door was destroyed by a bunch of weasels. Now, I don't get to spend nearly enough time in the country. My encounters with wildlife and livestock are limited to what I see when I'm out running early in the morning. And at least in New York, it's never more than a seagull or a pigeon. Yesterday morning, I got to see some rabbit tracks in the snow that crossed my outgoing ones when I was coming back. And last week in Omaha, I ran up a hill in the dark toward what I thought was a cat. I got closer and discovered a skunk ambling across my path. I waited very carefully until it got across the road and up the snowbank on the other side. Jesus has lots of encounters with other creatures in his environment, and he uses images of the countryside freely. He talks about sheep and shepherds, about wolves and sheep stealers, as well as vineyards and harvests and fishing expeditions. He rides a donkey. And here in this gospel, he calls Herod a fox. Farmers and herders certainly know about foxes, but they're not really anything of a threat to sheep or cattle or horses. They're only a threat to small livestock, like poultry and rabbits. And that's where Jesus goes with his image. He says, "Go tell that fox I'm busy. I'll see him later. I'll turn up in his lair," in other words, Jerusalem, "when it's time." It's a not so subtle way of putting Herod in his place. Jesus has a pretty clear sense of what's in front of him, but he's going on his own terms, not because a fox is chasing him. We usually think of foxes as clever, but Jesus is offering an insult. Foxes are small-time predators, and it's certainly a fitting image for Herod, who has to answer to Rome, and most definitely doesn't sit at the top of the food chain. Herod is a petty harasser of the small and the weak. Jesus keeps pushing that image. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I have tried to gather you up like a hen gathering her chicks under her wings, but you weren't interested. There's a fox in the hen house." And Jesus, as Mother Hen, is trying to protect the vulnerable. That image of God as a brooding hen is an ancient one. And maybe the most familiar time we hear it is that verse in the service of Compline. Keep us, O Lord, as the apple of your eye. Hide us under the shadow of your wings. It turns up several other places in the Psalms as well. Sheltering the chicks is one more example of God's care for the least of these. There's something intriguing and perhaps related going on in that story of Abram's encounter with God. Abram is desperate for an heir, somebody to carry on his name and his memory after he's gone, so that he is not eternally lost in the sands of time. God has repeatedly promised him an heir, and he repeats it here. Eliezer will not be your heir. Your own son will inherit and carry on your name. And then God invites Abram outside to look at the night sky. Your descendants will be as many as those stars. Abram gets another promise of land, and he can't quite believe that one either. He wants some evidence. Okay, says God, we'll cut a deal. And that's where this phrase comes from. They sign it in blood, the blood of some of Abram's livestock, a heifer, a goat, a ram, and two small birds. Abram cuts the livestock in two, but the birds are too small. He lays out the animals as an offering, and he keeps driving away the carrion eaters. When he falls asleep and begins to dream, God passes by as a pillar of flame and a cloud of smoke, and the covenant is sealed. There are birds everywhere. What's it like when a fox gets in the hen house? I think St. John's knows something about that. A petty tyrant claims the divine right of judgment, power over life and death, and wreaks havoc with God's creatures. It happens around us all the time when some human tyrant decides that he's going to control other people's lives. It's at the root of all kinds of slavery and oppression and exploitation, from the bully in the schoolyard to leaders of nations who believe that their government is a private bank account. Nothing keeps those tyrants in control except fear. In Liberia several years ago, the warlords were forced to the negotiating table by people who said, "No more, we've had enough." A large group of market women who were sick and tired of being unable to feed their children and watching their loved ones die and disappear, they finally got organized and said no. They said to those warlords, "We're going to take you to the negotiating table, and we're going to sit outside the meeting place, and we're going to stay there until you figure out how to live in peace." The Taliban stay in power through intimidation. They shut down girls' schools and insist that women can't go out and function in public. They shoot anybody who resists their authority. The violence in the Holy Land is rooted in the same kinds of fear-mongering by all parties. The rabid partisanship in our own Congress right now has a lot of fear wrapped up in it, insisting that some are going to be gored by health care reform or changes in immigration policies. Terrorists and tyrants only have power over people who are immobilized by fear. Jesus is challenging the people of Jerusalem to take shelter in a place that isn't based in violence. When they decline his offer, he says, "Well, it's your house. keep it. You just try and live in it. He doesn't abandon them, but he tells them that they're not going to see him, they're not going to notice him, until they recognize that he comes from the owner of the hen house, the God who dwells in Jerusalem's big house, the temple. It's not Rome's hen house. It belongs to the mother bird, and that fox is not going to protect them. The hen house has room for all sorts of creatures if they're looking for a home. A skunk can find shelter there if it wants to, and a bull, and even a fox if it will give up devouring chicks. God's promises usually come in pretty surprising ways. Abram's covenant encounter sounds pretty terrifying to any sane person. Bloody carcasses and vultures and smoking fire pots and deep and terrifying darkness. But even in the midst of all that, Abram is given the gift of sleep and dreaming. And he shelters under the wings of a trustworthy God. St. John's journey has been about letting go of fear and terror, and remembering trust and the love of God for all, even those who have injured us. Did you notice who came to warn Jesus about Herod? Those people that Christians often love to hate, the Pharisees. Even our supposed enemies can be a gift. Your healing has put away fear of those who have caused hurt. Fear has no place in the hen house. Fear won't build the reign of God.